Anthony Davis with an absolutely monster night in the Lakers win over the Grizzlies.
Plus the rest of the night in the NBA, including Trae Young's injury.
And a new report throws some questions at Kyrie and his relationship with the Nets. We've got it all in the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Let's do this.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA, the daily podcast covering everything you want to know about the association. And on Wednesdays, I'm Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales, Reds Army underscore John on Twitter, and I host the Locked On Celtics podcast.
So normally we do a too long didn't watch in the first segment, recap everything you didn't pay attention to the night before, but we're going to do it a little bit differently today because, oh man, Anthony Davis went off against the Memphis Grizzlies. It was a 120-91 win over them for the Lakers. Basically, this boils down to Anthony Davis putting up 40 points, 20 rebounds, 26 made free throws in all of 30 minutes. Just awesome. Like, tip of the hat to you, Anthony Davis.
Take that, James Harden. Anthony Davis is pretty good basketball player. He shot 17 shots and scored 40 points. That's what we call an efficient night in the NBA. He was just unstoppable. And against the Memphis Grizzlies, who, you know, you're throwing Jonas Valanciunas out there. What did you expect? There is just nothing you can do. And here's the thing. Anthony Davis was kind of like hurt for a second there. I thought he wasn't even going to come back in the game.
At one point, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. He had a little thing with his shoulder. You can see him like cranking the shoulder around like, oh, that feels a little weird. And they had the ice pack on it. And he went to the locker room and he came back out. And all he did was drop 40 and 20 with 27 free throw attempts. Just one of those nights that, and this is why Anthony Davis was such a hot commodity. And you know.
I'm pretty well aware.
Yeah. This is why everybody was like going crazy over him, because when he gets going like this, there's just nothing you can do. He plays like a wing and he's 7 feet tall and it's just ridiculous. I mean, you look across the board and it's just, I can't see it. Like, no flaws in this. 8 offensive rebounds, 20 rebounds overall. Unstoppable.
He was awesome in this game. Jaren Jackson Jr., who was playing defense on him a chunk of the time, had a very rough night because of this. And AD just went out and played with like a tenacity that you don't always see from him, which is maybe like the biggest knock on him. And he went after every single board he could. Like you said, 8 offensive rebounds, 20 on the defensive side. And he was getting hacked and fouled. This wasn't like a ref's whistle being very kind to him. He really got to the line for 27 free throw attempts and deserved all of those. And just put up an unbelievable night. No turnovers for him in this one, too. Just hyper efficient and just what can you do? The big thing I think that's kind of interesting in this is the minutes where he played with Dwight Howard out there, and we all think he should be a center, right? Like, you and I are probably in agreement on this.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
He looked really good in those minutes with Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard looked good in those minutes next to Anthony Davis, not doing a whole lot because he didn't need to do a whole lot. But I was kind of surprised how well that partnership worked in this game, and AD doesn't want to play center. And if he can make it work with Dwight Howard, who is clearly having fun out there, look, they're not going to, you know, it's like what we did a week ago when we said, yeah, like they're going to lose to the Clippers. They might get blown out against the Clippers, but they will trash some other teams in the league. And you saw it.
Yeah. Well, let's also dial it back for a second here. They beat the Memphis Grizzlies. And this is exactly how it's supposed to go when you play the Grizzlies. And the Grizzlies aren't good. And they don't have like Jaren Jackson Jr., okay, like fine, but like he has no chance right now at this stage against Anthony Davis. No one really has a chance against Anthony Davis. But this is a team in Memphis that they came out hot. Like, it felt like
it was like 12-2, I think, in the beginning of the game.
It felt like one of those deals where it's a young team. They're fresh off an exciting win, a last second win over Brooklyn, and they're feeling themselves, and they come into LA, and LA is just like, yeah, whatever, it's the Grizzlies. You get smacked in the mouth, and LA is like, okay. Oh, we're doing this? Like, one of those, you know, you made me bleed my own blood type of things. And well, then
that's what woke this team up, though. You saw it early on when they were down like that. They were just launching threes. There was no urgency to get to the rim or kind of play tough or hard or anything like that. It was like, let's just launch threes. We're better than this team. It'll come together. And it didn't. And then this team woke up, and then you saw Anthony Davis wake the hell up, and it led him to that victory.
Yeah, it was a 29-2 run in the third quarter. That's like Memphis couldn't hit a damn thing because, again, Memphis is not good. And, you know, you're trying to get Grayson Allen to score baskets for you. And, you know, he ends up 4-for-14 on the night and a minus 36. And don't tell me in game, one single game plus minus doesn't mean anything. You're a minus 36. That means something. So you're counting on these guys to step up, and there's just, they don't have anybody right now that's ready to do that. Like John Morant had a decent game, you know, but they're right. Exactly. They're overmatched.
But he had the points in this one. His passing was pretty subpar in this one, partially because like teammates just couldn't do anything. You know, they shot 32.6% on the night. He's probably got a few assists that were left hanging out there from him, but yeah, like no one just stepped up for Memphis in this one. And like there's some depth there. I don't want to say they're a good team. They've been more competitive maybe than we've expected from them. And John Morant the other night looked like a freaking superstar. But like someone should have done better, and they just did not in this one.
Yeah, no. And I think I'm looking at guys like, I don't want to put too much pressure on like a Dylan Brooks, but this is his third year in the league, and I think people in Memphis expected Dylan Brooks to kind of take a step forward here. And aside from hitting, you know, his threes, he's not taking a big step forward this year. And I'm not sure how it's all going to play out for Memphis, but like I think this is a year where if a guy like Dylan Brooks doesn't step up, then you have to like adjust some expectations for who's a future piece and who's not. But Brooks did not have a good game in this. He's just kind of like non-existent for this. Only 2 of 7, finished with 8 points. Like that's, you want to see a little bit more. Just you're not expecting a ton, but you're expecting Dylan Brooks to do a little bit more. And I just think that maybe this is one of those deals where you're just too overmatched and you kind of throw it out. But I do know that some of the early returns on a guy like Dylan Brooks, I think Memphis just kind of wants to see a little bit more from
him. Yeah, I'm sure they wanted to see more from like most of their guys in this game.
In a game like this, fair. Yes. Like,
Anthony Davis gave enough. Again, 40 points on the night, 20 rebounds for him. 26 of 27 at the free throw line, all in 30 minutes. Just an unbelievable night. And like that dude earned every one of those free throws. This was pretty much a game for the ages for Anthony Davis, James Harden, who, like you said, there were two other games, though, last night. We'll break them down for you, including an injury that could kind of affect the Eastern Conference playoff race just a little bit. But before we get to that, today's show brought to you by Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout. So we had a big game between the Atlanta Hawks and the Miami Heat, two teams that have been with winning records this year, pretty competitive for the young Hawks too, ended up going the way of the Miami Heat, 112-97. But that doesn't really make the biggest story here, and that's that Trae Young went out 2 minutes, I think, into the second quarter with a pretty nasty ankle injury, immediately ruled out. Woj, I think, said after x-rays came back negative, they've avoided a serious injury. Sounds like it could be 2 weeks or so before he comes back. This sucks. He's a really fun player.
Yeah, I mean, Trae Young, East Player of the Week. I mean, here's a guy who's out here. He's averaging, I mean, this game, because he only played 11 minutes and scored 5 points, dragged his average down, but he was averaging over 30 points a game to start the season. Obviously, early, so, I mean, some of this is going to level off, but Trae Young has been super exciting. He's been hitting shots from all over the floor. His passing has been on point, and the Hawks have just, in general, played very, very well, and maybe a little bit better at the beginning of the season than people expected, but obviously he's the engine that makes this thing go. And if he's not there, then who sets up somebody like John Collins, who hit a ton of shots? Like he was the only guy that was really scoring in this game, but like he needs to be set up. And if Trey's not there, it's going to be tough for them to set, for him to get set up, and guys like Herter to be set up, and everybody else. I mean, he's the guy that sets everybody up. So on top of his scoring, he really does raise everybody else's game.
Yeah, I was really into this game. I don't know. I really like this Hawks team for some reason. They have a ton of young guys that are really
fun to watch. There's nothing not to like.
Yeah, I know. They are so much fun to watch. And Trae Young is, I think, one of my favorite players already in the league. And the moment he left this game, their offense just hit a wall and stopped. They put up 23 in the second quarter, 21 in the third, 27th in the fourth. That's not going to get it done. You're not going to win very many games scoring that few. Getting under 100 for this Hawks team isn't going to do it. They are still really young, too, and you kind of saw it. Cam Reddish in this one looked pretty bad, I thought. Some of the other guys just couldn't really get it going. A guy like DeAndre Hunter as well. They really need Trae Young in there to just make their lives easier, and when he went out, just ground to a halt. It was kind of rough to watch this team, though. John Collins, I guess, was a bright spot. For the Miami Heat, this was the return of Jimmy Butler, who was pretty effective in this one, just kind of doing his Jimmy Butler thing, 21 points on the night for him. Kendrick Nunn got going after a slow start. He's been
shout out to Kendrick Nunn.
Oh, man.
Who expected that?
No one did. What an amazing scouting job by the Miami Heat, by the way. He finished with 17 points on the night. He was in the G League all of last year, wasn't he?
He was. Undrafted a year ago in the G League. One of those like cut and stash from the Golden State Warriors, and then signed by the Heat. And now just a shock, averaging over 20 points a game to start the season. Like that's, I mean,
they needed a guy like him just to have some youth on the team that has some like upside to kind of mix with the experienced guys. They had Dragic in this one, 21 points. Tyler Hero, who's also really fun to watch. That dude is like, I don't know, he's just a solid basketball player. 29 points on the night for the rookie. He was 7 of 9 from the field, 3 of 4 from deep. He also got to the free throw line a ton, 16 times in this one, and chipped in 7 rebounds. He's fun. Like, this Heat team, they look pretty good, actually, now, especially with Jimmy Butler back.
So, yeah. Now, as a Celtics guy, the Celtics had the 14th pick in the draft. They ended up with Romeo Langford. The 13th pick in the draft was Tyler Hero. And you just sit there and you're like, oh, one pick away. Now, I don't know what Romeo Langford's going to be because he's been hurt, and we'll see. I mean, obviously, he has the potential to be pretty good at some point. But watching Tyler Hero, he immediately raises the ceiling of these Miami Heat. You come into the season with certain expectations of, well, Jimmy Butler can do this, and maybe they can be a fourth, fifth, sixth seed in that mix. But, I mean, I don't expect Tyler Hero to drop 29 points on 9 shots every night, but he has been extraordinarily good. And for a guy with a reputation as a shooter to get to the line and drive as much as he did and even, like, set guys up, I think that's been that's just a great addition to this Miami Heat team that I don't even think the most optimistic Heat fans could have expected Hero to be this good this soon. So, I mean, obviously a fantastic night and a fantastic start to the season for him.
Yeah, just the right mix of youth and established veterans. They are 3-1 now on the year. They look pretty good, and now they've got Jimmy Butler back, which maybe makes them a little bit more dangerous. Other game on the night, Dallas Mavericks maybe scoring an upset over the Denver Nuggets, 109-106. This Dallas team's actually pretty good. I think he's kind of seeing just Luka Doncic is Luka Doncic, though he struggled in this one. But you still got Kristaps Porzingis, who did do it points-wise. The depth for the Mavs really shone through. They had all but one guy in double figures in this one, outscored the Denver Nuggets. I don't know where my stat went. I had it pulled up, but their bench just basically
the bench,
killed
I got
them.
It right here.
There you
60,
go.
61-22 in a game, a three-point game. The Dallas bench outscored Denver's 61-22, shooting 59% on the night, 7 of 15 from 3. I mean, really, this was like Porzingis did not have a great night, shot 4 of 14. Doncic shot 3 of 12. And Doncic had like the key bucket at the end of the game, but was kind of, sort of, not effective the rest of the game. I saw a lot of individual play. I saw him try to cook and never really get going. It was the rest of these guys. Like Moxie Kleber had a nice, like Tim Hardaway Jr. out of nowhere had a nice game.
Jalen Brunson was getting in there with 11 points. Like everyone but one of their players scored in double digits in this one. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and it's funny, like Dwight Powell did not ultimately have a good game, but like I thought Dwight Powell at the beginning of the game, like in the first quarter, Dwight Powell was kind of everywhere for the first 5 minutes, and then that stopped and everyone else kind of took over after that. But yeah, I mean, this was just a battle of the benches. And from the Denver perspective, you had like Jamal Murray, the good and the bad. Like Jamal Murray, so polarizing sometimes, because he goes off on a third quarter run where he scores half of his points. He had 16, 8 in the third quarter, perfect third quarter. But then in the fourth quarter, when they needed the bucket, like the buzzer beater, he was just solo, no ball movement, no nothing, didn't even get a good shot. Ended up with a very bad step back 28 footer that just, it was as good as he can be. Like that was as bad as he could be for Denver.
Yeah, and well, and they lost, and that's okay. They're still 3-1, but Dallas, kind of a surprise, going to make it kind of difficult in the Western Conference. Basically, almost every team, other than maybe the Pelicans right now, is competitive. Yeah, but when you think about it, Luka and Porzingis, that's two borderline superstar players right there. Like, that's going to carry you pretty far in kind of a league of duos right now. That's a pretty good one. So that's the too long didn't watch, not that many games last night, so we got to dive into them a little bit more. We will then focus on Kyrie and the Nets and the story coming from that in just a moment. Before we do that, though, don't forget, subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get your podcast from. Here Monday through Friday for you, breaking down everything you want to know around the league, recapping all the games that you didn't watch. Keep up to date with everything. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. So new report over at ESPN today talking a little bit about how the Nets kind of super team came together with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and DeAndre Jordan. And John, I would like to live on a boat for a month, a yacht in Brazil during the Olympics. That sounds really cool. But that's not what look, we all knew they kind of all want to play together and teams guys want to team up and create super teams. It's the stuff about Kyrie, and you're probably better equipped to talk about this than almost anyone else, that is kind of surprising in there already, given that the season has just started.
Yeah, I think the big takeaway and the stuff that's going around is that Kyrie has had some moments where he just kind of, as it said, he goes into funks. And he will be he's described as moody. Look, I've seen it. I've seen it from a Boston Celtics perspective, covering this team, being around the team. There was a stretch last season where he didn't even come out to warm up with the team in layup lines. Like he works out and does his thing very, very early. And then everybody goes through their workout, their warm ups. And then the team comes out for layup lines. And then right before like team intros, he would walk out, and he did that for like a week or two. He wouldn't even sit on the bench. He'd sit on the floor. He looked miserable. Like for the first half of the season, I was like, nah, don't worry about it. He said he's coming back. I think he's going to come back. And then he looked as miserable as I've ever seen anybody look. And I thought, wow, he really is gone. And then something switched and he became like nice guy, personable again. And it's my take. And it's I feel like there's more to this than, like, a lot of people would be like, well, geez, this Kyrie, man, he's a diva. He's so weird. I think this is indicative of something like more serious than that. And I'm a big mental health advocate, and I've been touched by like mental health issues in my life. I won't get into it to spare us the time, but like, I think there's something here. And I think if the Nets really want to get to the heart of this, they're going to have to find a way to get him to open up to somebody to try to get to the heart of this, because I don't think this sounds healthy, Jake. This sounds like a guy who's like everybody goes through mood swings and this and that, but like, this sounds like much more serious than your typical stuff.
Yeah, this reading this today kind of surprised me a little bit. Look, like, I'm not a doctor, but you can kind of tell when something's off. And look, I go through periods where I'm like, I hate everyone. I'm going to be antisocial. My regular job, I talk to people like for a living. You have periods where you're like, I just need a break from all of this. And maybe that's what it is, being a superstar athlete in the spotlight, having to do media availability and all that stuff. It can be a lot. Maybe you just kind of need to like decompress. But the way it kind of comes out and what we saw in Boston last season, I think it shows that it could kind of derail a team a little bit. And that's the last thing the Nets want. Part of this article was interesting because it kind of talks about their approach, and they've been very rigid with things before, and it's worked for them. But it was with kind of guys who were up and coming or not established or fringe guys that they were just trying to stay in the league and make better. So those guys really bought in. And now it's a little bit harder to do so with guys like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And you can very clearly see, if he's going into these funks already, if they try and force like the Nets approach to everything and kind of how they do it, it's going to backfire, right? Like, I think that's pretty clear that it you've got to kind of merge these two ideas and find the right way to do it. There's a team psychiatrist basically on staff for every franchise now, every NBA player. This is going to be kind of a test maybe of how those get used and if that system's working.
This is such a hard spot for an NBA team or any team to be in, because they have a goal, right? The NBA teams are in a business, and you have to make money, obviously. You have to have a winning product on the floor. And after having signed Durant and Kyrie, you want to have some sort of payoff. So there's a very hard line business. Like, we need these guys to perform. And if you're not performing, then you cut your losses and move on. Now, I'm obviously not saying that about Kyrie, but I'm just saying, like, there's a cutthroat nature to professional sports. But at the same time, if there's a mental health, an undiagnosed mental health thing going on here, and I'm not going to speculate exactly, but again, from my experience, this feels like something serious. And so how do you, as a professional franchise, manage that? Because you've got that other goal, the professional goal, the cutthroat goal, but like on a human side, you've got to like nurture these guys. You have to, mental health is a serious thing. So I think they are in a tough spot because you have to find a balance. And from the Nets' perspective, they all say, and they might be circling the wagons a little bit. They say it's not true. I know that some of it has to be true because I've seen it, and that's just Kyrie. Like, that's who Kyrie is. My hope out of all of this is that somehow somebody involved with the franchise or somewhere, someone slowly somehow connected to the franchise says, you know what? Enough of this, enough of people enabling him, enough of all of that. Somebody's got to get to him and just get him to like start talking, talk about whatever it is. You know, it doesn't matter your situation, how much money you make, how famous you are. Like, none of that stuff matters when your brain starts telling you things. Like, that's what depression is or whatever it is. So my biggest takeaway here is that I hope that somebody gets to him and says, all right, let's work through this.
Well, look, it could be just the situation there. It seems like both he and Durant were looking for a spot where they just felt comfortable, accepted. We've talked about it on here before, and I wonder if maybe that will help. But at the same point, if he's already kind of going into these funks, okay.
But this is his history, not. Jake.
Yeah, and it's already happening despite all of that stuff, going on with the Nets. So it shows it's probably not going to work, right?
Right, right. Like, not to dominate the segment, but like, look, in high school, he transferred 2 years into high school. He didn't even go through his entire high school career with one team. He switched in the middle of high school. He had 1 year of college. He got drafted. He asked for a trade away from the team that drafted him. Then he left the team that he got traded to at a year after saying that he was going to stick around. Like, this is his MO. It feels like he's constantly chasing, like, well, I didn't like that situation. I'm going to go something new. And then the next thing comes along. I didn't like that. I'm going to go to something new. And you just wonder, at what point is he going to find what he's looking for? Maybe Brooklyn is what he's looking for. Like, maybe that's it. And the one thing burying, I think, maybe one of the more important things of this, after all of this stuff that's come out, like, he's looked good for Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, he's also been, you know, a, like, very good basketball player so far,
right,
this year.
Like, oh, by the way, he's been awesome for Brooklyn, even though they've lost a couple of games, but individually, like, he's been awesome. And so I don't know. This could be like his final stop. This could be like his final, like, okay, I feel good. But if it's not, then I can totally see how this could not be. So his history is what it is. Somehow it's got to change.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's going to be interesting because there is some, like, I guess, combustible issues potentially. I don't even know if that's a word there in Brooklyn with the Nets, but we'll see how it goes. This is early on in the season. They're already kind of having some of this stuff come out, but hopefully they can get it under control because he's good. That team should be good. They're going to be fun to watch in the future. Hopefully this podcast was fun to listen to for you guys as we will continue to do it in the future. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. And on Wednesdays, I'm Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales. You can find me on Twitter at @RedsArmy_John. I host the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with you all next week.